evidence of their wisdom is proved by the quality of their own conduct. Their own conduct will be impacted because of their wisdom. In James chapter 3, verses 13 to 18, we find our text today. James chapter 3, verses 13 to 18, and let me ask you to stand to honor the reading of God's Word. Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder in every evil thing. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. This is God's Word, and you may be seated. We are challenged to show your wisdom and learning through behavior and deeds in humble wisdom. Show your wisdom and your understanding in life through your humble wisdom. Just as your faith is displayed by your works, which James talks about earlier, that we demonstrate that we are a people of faith in God by the way we live our life, by the works that we do. He's also saying to us that our wisdom is displayed by our works, by our deeds. Your behavior will display your wisdom and your learning and your understanding. At least it should. That's the point he's trying to make, is that your life will display whether you are a wise person or not. And because it should demonstrate itself in your actions, your behavior, your relationships with others, it ought to come through. Your wisdom is to be displayed in humility. Or it could also be the word could be translated, understood as meekness. And I'm going to talk more about that in just a second. Meekness. Our character is to be one of meekness. Now, sometimes people get confused, meekness and weakness, and they try to make them synonymous, and they are not. Now, in biblical days, meekness was never used in a list of virtues. In biblical days and earlier and following, the entertainment of the day and time was a professional speaker. Rhetoricians who would speak publicly, they would train other people how to do that, and that's how they would make their living, is by training others and by giving performances. And the better their performance, the more money they made. And one of the topics they often discussed would be virtues and vices, what is good and what is bad. Meekness, outside of Christ and outside of the church, never made the list of virtues. It was always a vice because it was seen as weakness, and nobody wanted to be weak, so it was seen as weakness. And instead, but yet when we come to Jesus Christ and when we come to the early church and writings of the New Testament, we begin to see meekness as a great strength. It's a virtue. It's one of the best things that we can have. How do we understand meekness, though? One of the great descriptions of being able to understand meekness is strength that is harnessed. Now, I did not get to watch this yesterday. I missed both rounds of the Triple Crown, and we won't have one yet this year. But if you watched the Preakness yesterday, you saw meekness. And James has already described it up in verse 3. You put a bit into a horse's mouth, and with that bit you can control that massive beast. And that strength and the elegance and the beauty of their running. But yet from a small little bit you can control them. But that mighty force, all of those muscles, all of that strength, as you can see a horse as it gallops and it races around that track and trying to be the first one around. And you see that incredible strength. It's a picture of meekness. It is a picture of strength under control. So that's what he is talking about here. Meekness is this strength that is under control. In the movie 42, I won't recommend movies from the pulpit very often, but if you haven't seen 42, you ought to go see 42, especially if you like baseball, if you like good storylines, if you care about justice. So we can cover lots of bases, probably name a few others. But when the owner of the Dodgers was talking to Jackie Robinson about what it might be like if he came to play in the major leagues, he said probably one of those famous lines from the movie. I think you've probably even seen it in a clip about the movie. He told him, he said, "Look, I am not looking for a man with enough courage to fight. I am looking for a man with enough courage not to fight back." Because he told him, you're going to be harassed. People are going to call you names. People are going to say all kinds of vile things about you. And they did. On the field. And they let it go on. That was astounding to me. They just let it go on the field. And he didn't fight back. It's meekness. He says, this is what wisdom is to be like. Wisdom is to be displayed with great humility, with great strength, under control. Now, an impure heart will lead you against the truth. Trying to find wisdom with an impure heart is trouble. He says to us, and he calls on us, to examine your heart to see if there's any jealousy or selfish ambition in your own heart. Is there any jealousy or selfish ambition in your own heart? Jealousy could be better understood perhaps as a harsh zeal. A zeal to be first, a zeal to be the best, whatever it may be. Because another way to understand it is rivalry. That I don't want that person to win. I want to be ahead of that person. That sense of rivalry in life. A zeal can be a great thing, but it can be a bad thing. Zeal, if it's harnessed in the right direction, again, that sense of meekness, it can be a wonderful thing. In the New Testament, we find zeal in a really bad picture later in the book of Acts when they're stoning Stephen and this guy named Saul standing off to the side holding everybody's coats. Because Saul walked around with orders to be able to imprison, to persecute, to kill Christians. Until one of those days or one of those walks, God got a hold of him. And God changed his name later to Paul. And then he wrote a big chunk of the New Testament for us and started a bunch of churches and all of those kinds of things. So, but Paul beforehand had this harsh zeal. He had this sense of rivalry that was going on. And so it was a fanaticism that was negative instead of positive. It was detrimental instead of encouraging. And it happens in religion. If you remember, some of you not old enough to remember, but if you remember David Koresh and the Branch Davidians and all that went on there, I think that story was told well beyond the borders of Texas. But you saw what happened, a fanaticism that led to a detrimental thing, but yet they would have seen themselves as doing that which was good. Or he says, be careful about your own selfish ambition. Another way to understand this selfish ambition is a term that is described as a party spirit. Now, I don't mean party like what we're going to do across the hall in a few minutes as we celebrate Betty Lynn and we are celebrate all of her wonderful years of service here with us and as part of this church family and send her off. That's not the kind of party we're talking about. Think Republicans and Democrats for a minute. Now, keep yourself cool, okay? Keep yourself cool. But think Republicans and Democrats and the fact that they do not want to work together for the good of everybody. They just want to propose whatever they think is best for their own party agenda. That's a party spirit. Okay? Now, I just say that and I don't have to talk a whole lot because we see that displayed on the TV almost every day for us. And the result of all of that is that we get this jealous and angry leader who forms a group and tries to withdraw from the rest. And what happens is you get a, and it can happen inside the church. It does happen inside the church. And you get somebody that gets riled up about something and they don't check their own heart. And this jealousy develops and they become angry about things. And they try to pull people away from the church instead of drawing people together. And being united, they seek to divide because they see others as opposing them. They see others as wrong. And their wisdom isn't really wisdom. And he'll explain what it is in just a few moments. And so we've got to watch those things there. And whenever we have things like this, when there is this selfish ambition in us, there's this bitter jealousy in us, what happens is then we tend to go against the truth. Instead of helping bring along the truth, instead of helping to promote the truth, we tend to go against the truth and fight against it. The text says, don't boast against the truth, don't lie against the truth. One man in writing about it says, don't brag about it and so deny the truth, as he translated it. Don't brag about it. What is it? It's your own wisdom. Don't brag about being a wise person saying, I have wisdom. And then what happens is you really don't, because you're trying to elevate yourself, and that's not what real, genuine wisdom does. Don't brag about it, and then as you're trying to brag about it, what happens is you're denying the truth. The truth, we need to understand, is more than just an intellectual concept that we get in our minds. And it, don't be afraid to use your mind. God gave you one. Use it for His kingdom and for His glory. Don't leave it apart. Don't say, well, I know Christ, I don't have to use my brain anymore. No, He gave you the brain. Use it for Him and for His glory. But this meaning of truth is that truth is it's not just intellectual, but it's also moral and spiritual. Moral and spiritual truth. Henry Blackaby teaches us in Experiencing God and gives us that great lesson that truth is a person. His name is Jesus Christ. Okay, so we need to understand this truth. And so what is it saying to us if he says, don't brag against, don't lie against the truth? Well, boasting is not a characteristic of wisdom. Despite what earthly wisdom may demonstrate, and people try to say, well, those people are wise, and they tend to want to brag on themselves, scriptural wisdom is saying to us, boasting is not a characteristic of one who has wisdom from God. Because godly wisdom is humble. There's a humility in it. And it's a word that goes against people who have jealousy and selfish ambition, who want to be a rivalry against somebody, who want to tear apart instead of put together. So he's saying, hey, these folks that want to tear apart, they're going against the truth because Jesus' desire is to bring us together. Well, wisdom from above, wisdom from the Lord has some notable characteristics about it, as well as does wisdom that's not from the Lord. For he says to us, earthly wisdom, wisdom that doesn't come from above, meaning it doesn't come from the Lord, wisdom that is earthly wisdom is marked by some certain characteristics. He names three. I'll mention four because he's already really mentioned one of those. First of all, he says it's earthly. It's earthly wisdom. Well, what does that mean? It means it's inferior. It's not as good as heavenly wisdom. It doesn't rank up there. Matter of fact, it will be a denial of heavenly wisdom. It's going to go against heavenly wisdom. It also says that it's unspiritual. What does that mean? It's devoid of the Spirit. The Spirit of God is not going to be found in it. That's not going to come from the Spirit. Matter of fact, it will contrast what the Spirit of God would say to us. It also says this, it's demonic. Wow. He's not messing around, is he? It's demonic. Their deeds are inspired by demons. And he's addressing the church. Wow. Pay attention to that. But he also says this, he's already said it, is that all of this, those characteristics here, earthly, unspiritual, demonic, but the one he's already mentioned is it goes against the truth. Earthly wisdom. Wisdom that is from here, and we try to then promote it that it really is something and it's of worth and it's of value, but it's not. He's saying this earthly wisdom, it's unspiritual, it's demonic, and a demonstration of it is that it's going against the truth. And it's being portrayed by people who are trying to tear things apart instead of put them together, that they have this party spirit that, no, it's got to be my way, not your way, instead of together finding a way. Something we need to understand is those with that party spirit are going to have wisdom that some people may want to try to elevate as good. May want to try to lift it up, point to it, say, well, they have good stuff. And he said, no, it's earthly, it's devoid of the spirit, and it's demonic. And a party spirit, this kind of wisdom, will disturb the community of the church. It will do damage to the community of the church. And I have to tell you, I've pastored where I've seen this. It's not really fun. You go through an experience of having to terminate a staff member, you'll see people find party lines in a hurry. Or you got to build multi-million-dollar buildings. You can find them. I've gone to places where they had splits and division and anger and hurt and resentment. Families no longer together, all of those kinds of things. It's hurt, it's painful. And what James is telling us is it comes from these things. It's not earthly wisdom, it's not heavenly wisdom. People have not acted as though they were led by the Spirit of God, but rather what they did was devoid of the Spirit. Because it tears apart. But he goes on to say, here's something good for us. If we're going to be a people of faith, and we're going to be people who say, you know, I follow Jesus Christ. I'm a person of faith. I trust in Jesus. I know Jesus. I walk with Jesus. Then we're going to have wisdom that comes down from above. It's going to come from the Father. And it will rest upon us and will be a part of our lives. And if it's from God, it will be displayed in our character. It's going to show up in how we live. If it's from God, and we have this wisdom that's from God, it'll be evident in how we live and what we do. One of the things I didn't really know about Jackie Robinson was that he and his wife were Christians. You watch the story and you understand that. You realize why he could do that and go through what he went through. Godly wisdom that was displayed in character. It gave evidence in how he interacted in the things that he did and the way he controlled himself. Wisdom that comes from the Father is marked by some certain characteristics. And it says first. Here's the first characteristic of wisdom that comes from God. It's pure. It's pure. The person with godly wisdom will develop and display the character of God, and God is pure, and so will a person of wisdom be. 1 John 3:3 says this, "And everyone who has this hope fixed on him purifies himself just as he is pure." Now, the person who has this hope in Jesus Christ purifies himself, herself, just as Jesus is pure. Now, purity means clean. It means unblemished. And remember, Jesus Christ is a sacrificial lamb that died on the cross. He was a sacrificial lamb. Now, in the sacrificial system that we find in the Old Testament, when they picked out the lamb that they were going to use, that lamb had to be unblemished. No mark. Yeah, because you were going to offer your best to God. You weren't going to take the animal that, you know, maybe had a limp leg, or maybe had this ugly spot across its back. You weren't going to take that animal and give it to God. No, you were going to find your best one and give that one to God. And so God needed the best sacrifice He could have, and the best sacrifice God could have was His own Son, the unblemished Lamb, who was pure. And so James is saying to us, look, if you're going to be my follower, and you're going to be a follower of Jesus, then, and you're going to have wisdom that comes from God, the first characteristic about it is that it's pure. That there's purity in your life. And your character will display the character of God. That's a good place to start, isn't it? That's also a really good place to start your own examination. How is my life? Do I have purity in my life? Because if you're devoid of purity, you're going to be devoid of wisdom. At least godly wisdom. So that's a good place for examination. What's it like in your life? How's the purity in your own life? Now, you're not going to be sin-free this side of heaven. But all of us can sin less. And the less we sin, the greater our purity grows. And the greater the likelihood our wisdom increases. And we will reflect the character of God. So we start there. As it works into our lives. I mean, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus gives us this great teaching. And says, and what Jesus is giving us in the Sermon on the Mount is, how do we live this out in a relationship with Him? It's going to affect who we are. And you get to chapter 6, and He starts at chapter 6 with almsgiving, which means, are you going to be a good steward of your money? And the only way to be a really good steward of your money is to be willing to give part of it away. And then He says that when you fast, notice He didn't say if. He says, when you fast, as we're going to go feast here in a few minutes. But anyway, but fasting would be a part of your character as a follower of Christ. And then He talks about prayer, where you pray and how you pray. So He says it's going to impact your life. Your wisdom from God is going to impact your character. It's going to affect who you are and the way you live that out. It's going to affect all of your body. It'll affect your mind. How you think, what you think, the way you think, your ability to think, it'll affect your eyes. What you look at and what you choose not to look at. As Job said, it set nothing unworthy in front of his eyes so that his eyes would be guarded. It'll affect your ears. What do you hear? What do you listen to? How well do you listen? Are you willing to listen to the voice of God? What about your mouth? How do you speak? Or do you know when to not speak? And do you speak with kindness and gentleness, or is there a sharpness and a bitterness and an anger to your mouth? What about your hands? Your service to others, your skill in serving the Lord and your willingness to serve. What about your feet? Do you walk in the paths of righteousness? Are you obedient to the Lord? Wisdom, chiefly, first and foremost, is pure. And that purity will impact every bit of your life. Internally and externally. But there's some other characteristics of it. Just first and foremost is purity. If you skip the purity, we're in trouble. Okay? You're not going to get to the rest of it. But it says this. It's peaceful. It's not going to cause contention or division. It's peaceful. It's gentle. You do not become angry or combative or defensive, even under provocation. Now, I'm not going to give the whole movie away, but if you go to 42, Jackie's out to bat. And the manager of the Phillies wasn't happy about it. And stood on the field and called him, said all kinds of vile things about the man. Jackie finally responded in the hallway back behind the dugout all alone. Not to the man. Pretty good example of gentleness. You're reasonable. It means you're willing to yield in obedience to God. That's what that means. You're willing to yield in obedience to God. You're reasonable. You're yielding. It doesn't mean you don't have convictions and that you get blown and tossed about like James talks about in the first chapter. No, that's not what he's saying. He says, you submit to the teaching of God and you yield your life to the Lord. Now, the next two items on this list fit together. First of all, you are full of mercy. You're concerned about the suffering of others. And you are full of good fruits, which means you will do something about the suffering of others. You are impartial. You are not given to that party spirit. Rather, you are harmonious and you bring people together. It says this as well, you are sincere. You don't pretend. What you see is what you get. And wisdom brings about peace from peaceful people. Wisdom brings about peace from peaceful people. James issues his challenge to anybody who will cherish a reputation for wisdom. By his good life, let him show his work. His life equals his conduct. How do you live? And your works. What wisdom can do by producing a mode of life that is good in and of itself and is a benefit to the community around you. A claim to wisdom which is not substantiated by good conduct is as empty as a claim to faith without good works. Did you get that? Did you hear that? A claim to wisdom which is not proven by your good conduct is as empty as a claim to faith without any good works to prove it. My prayer is that Emmanuel Baptist Church will be full of wise people. Are you one of them? Our Heavenly Father, we thank you for the word from James for today, a word which we could explore.